But we're going to get things started with Scott Thompson. Scott was one of the members of the Canadian comedy troupe Kids in the Hall. Their subversive sketch comedy series aired on HBO and the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation in the late 80s and early 90s. 20 years later, the kids' comedy holds up incredibly well. That's partly because they were ahead of their time. And I think it also has a lot to do with the kids' excellent acting skills. These guys fully inhabited their characters in a way that no comedy troupe has done before or since. Take, for example, Scott Thompson's famous creation, Buddy Cole. Buddy is an effeminate gay socialite with a tendency to lisp. And he's not only out there with his sexuality, he is out there with his opinions. There's nothing that Buddy Cole will not speak his mind about. In 1998, Scott Thompson and Kids in the Hall writer Paul Bellini collaborated on a book called Buddy Babylon, the autobiography of Buddy Cole. Buddy Cole was an icon at an especially homophobic time in comedy and in the culture at large. Now, 20 years later, this faux memoir has been republished. And just a warning, Scott uses a slur that some listeners may find offensive. Here's Scott Thompson as Buddy Cole.
They say that the exact circumstances of a person's birth determines the course of the rest of his or her life. In my case, this was profoundly so. Let me explain. I was born on February 29th, 1960, a leap year, thereby celebrating my birthday every 4 years. It was inevitable I would be a homosexual. Imagine, even when I'm 80, in some places I'll still be too young to drink. Now, to look at me, you'd think that I was hatched from a Fabergé egg, the scion of a lost branch of one of the royal houses of Europe. For years, this is what I actually told people. But now that I've been given money to tell my life story, I feel the truth threatening to break through. No, dear reader, I was not born with a silver spoon in my mouth, more like a rusty fork. Now, before I launch you on the thrill ride that is my life, I must give you some background information. Think of it as foreplay. So lay back and spread your legs, because some of this stuff is pretty hard to swallow. You'll need every hole you've got. I was born on a pig farm in northern Quebec, Canada, in a little hamlet of 2,000 people called Saint-Hubert-sur-la-Lac, or St. Hubert on the Lake. As far as I know, there was never actually a St. Hubert, but there was a St. Hubert's chicken restaurant nearby, so that must have been where the name came from. I was the last of 23 children. I was christened Charles Butterick Cole. The Charles was after Charles Boyer, Maman's favorite actor. The Butterick, after my paternal grandfather. Everyone called me Butterick, though, until one day my father shortened it to Buddy by mistake, and it stuck. My parents, Angus Sean Cole, a lusty Scotsman who arrived in Quebec in 1920 at the age of 15, and my mother, Giselle Christiane Lavigne, the only child of Quebecois pig farmers, met at a cockfight in 1930 and married soon after. My family operated in both official languages. We spoke French to our mother and Scottish to our father. From what I saw, they loved each other very much. That's probably why I turned out so stable. Mama doted on Papa's brusque Scottish virility, and Papa adored Mama, who was no looker. But she had a jolly spirit, a good heart, and most importantly, came with a farm. People today are almost offended that my parents had such a big family, that they were somehow enviro-terrorists. But I figure, if it took that many children to produce me, then it was worth the extra burden on the planet. Did I go too far?
No, that was exactly right. Well, okay. No, you didn't go too far literally, nor did you go too far figuratively.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
People keep saying that I'm going too far, but it doesn't seem like it's happening.
Yeah.
I feel like a buddy can't go far enough for society right now.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. So this book, Buddy Babylon, is very funny, and the energy, flow, and pace is impeccable. Why hasn't this been turned into a movie yet?
Why did it even not get reviewed 20 years ago?
Yeah, tell me about that.
The book was released into a storm of nothingness. No one reviewed it. No one talked about it. It sold, and mm-hmm. It never was off the shelves. I never saw it in a bargain bin, but nobody touched it. No one reviewed it. No one talked about it. It was as if gay people were ashamed of it, and straight people didn't want to say they loved it because it would make people think they were fags. Mm. And you have to recall that 20 years ago was a vastly different world. And so now, 20 years later, my belief is that people are ready for this book. Because it is the best thing and the funniest thing I've ever done. It broke my heart that no one paid it any mind. And now I really think it's time for people to give the book the credit that it's due.
Yeah, it's well overdue. While reading it, I couldn't help but think of movies like Forrest Gump and Zelig.
Oh, I want this to be a movie so badly.
Buddy has this uncanny ability to give birth to this dreary modern phenomena a la Forrest Gump and Zelig. And you and your co-author, Paul Bellini, must have had a lot of fun deciding what which things Buddy would be responsible for.
Oh, absolutely. That was one of the very things at the beginning that we decided on, that Buddy would be at the center of every major social, historical movement, and that somehow he would always be at the center of it. And very much, Zelig was definitely very much one of the models for it.
Yeah, it really is. It really is a wonderful book.
And I think so. Thank you.
I'd like to talk to you about the origin story of Charles Butterick, Buddy Cole. When did you first create him?
Well, I first created him with Paul Bellini. Everything starts with Paul. Basically, I guess it would have been the mid-80s, in a period of my life when everything was happening. I met the kids in the hall. I just started to try to do stand-up. Paul had just bought a video camera, which was very key. And this is the day when people didn't go around documenting their lives.
Yeah.
And Paul Bellini was a real outlier and a real early adopter, and he bought a video camera, and he proceeded to basically document our whole group of friends. And because Paul and I were both gay men in the 80s and AIDS hit, I think that in many ways we were so cursed that we retreated into art. I just really had this feeling that we were all going to die. So Paul and I just basically started documenting everything. And then one afternoon, we were in Paul's place, and we were in his room, which was full of blue paintings from his friend Randall Finnerty. And I just said, "It's my blue period." And he turned the camera on and goes, "Start talking." And I started talking like Buddy Cole. I started doing that accent, that voice. Yeah. And I started saying, the first stuff I started saying was, "I'm a vampire. I'm 1,000 years old." And so that was the initial impulse was, but Buddy Cole was, I probably just read Interview with a Vampire.
Oh, yeah, Anne Rice, right?
So one of the models for Buddy Cole was that. Like, this is a man that's been around forever and knows everyone and is the star of his life. And I just had an affair with a guy that was very effeminate. And, you know, like most gay men, I was filled with self-loathing about my own effeminacy. Mm-hmm. And I'd never met a man like this guy before. And he was effeminate, but I found him very attractive. And it kind of threw me because his femininity was like weaponized. And he was handsome and smart as a whip, French-Canadian guy. We had a brief affair, and then he dumped me unceremoniously, quite cavalierly. Mm. And then he got sick, and he died. And he was one of the first to go, and he went so quickly. I think that was the voice that I started to imitate, was him.
Yeah.
So that's where it began.
Yeah. If you don't mind my asking, did you create the character of Buddy Cole before you came out as gay?
No. No, they all came at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Paul and I had a punk band called Mouth Congress. We started performing. I started doing Buddy Cole. I met the kids in the hall. All of these things happened at the same time, all in the mid-80s. Everything just changed for me.
Wow. So how did the first Buddy Cole monologue that you did, the first one for Kids in the Hall, how did that go over?
Well, it went over like gun, what is it? Gun? Gangbusters? Gangbusters!
Yeah.
That's it. Go. Gunbusters.
Gunbusters. I ain't afraid of no guns.
I ain't afraid of no gunbusters. No, it went over very, very well. It's different now. Like, back then, a lot of it was just the idea of playing a character like that was outrageous.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people laughed just at the way I moved, the way I spoke. Mm-hmm. They're just, people are conditioned to laugh at the effeminate male.
Yeah, and maybe some of it was uncomfortable laughter too.
Absolutely. It's a very different world now. I look back on it and I think a lot of the laughter came from people just literally feeling superior to the character in a way.
Mm.
But then the problem is Buddy Cole feels superior to you. So you can't really feel superior to him. He will smack you down.
Yeah.
And I think now I'm a much better joke writer. But back then, I think a lot of the laughter came from the language, because I've always been a literary guy. So mm-hmm. a lot of it was just the language that I chose and the way that I moved and spoke. And yeah. now I think that I'm actually a better writer and that I'm a better joke writer and that Buddy is in many ways funnier. Dave tells a story when we were doing a show, and afterwards a bunch of guys came up to us and said, "I love it how you're sticking it to the fags." And Dave's like, "Well, we're not sticking it to the fags. This is a fag." And they're like, "Come on, no fag would act like that. No one would do that deliberately." And I'm like, "Yeah, well, I would." The idea that someone would be openly gay and portray a character like that was unheard of. Just unheard of.
Yeah. Well, and as you mentioned, it was a very different time back then.
Oh, my God. It's like another dimension. I can't even believe it's the same planet.
But isn't it kind of similar in terms of, like, I think I read somewhere where you said that now is also a very polarizing time.
I find it a very similar time, yeah. Which is yeah. why I think Buddy's having a moment and why
yes.
there's this, I think, a groundswell to bring the kids in the hall back, because I think we're needed right now. We're very good when society is in free fall.
Yeah. And also you guys are ahead of your time.
Yes, and I think we actually are again. We're ahead of the trend, and I think that it would be wonderful for us to come back. And I think that one of the reasons Buddy's doing so well right now is because people have to listen to him. Even if you're a young social justice warrior who doesn't like to hear anyone say fag or things like that, you have to listen to this guy because he's a war vet, and he's got wounds, and you have to listen. You mm-hmm. just have to. Kids have to go, "Grandpa knows what he's talking about."
Mm-hmm. That's for sure, yeah. One of the beautiful things about Buddy is that he doesn't seem to have a censor, you know, like
None.
An inner sense. There's no inner censor. He can say anything he wants and get away with it.
It's amazing. My show is appalling. The show I'm doing now is just appalling. Just, I cannot believe the things I say. I keep track of rape jokes through my show. It's ridiculous. And people say, "You can't say that." I go, "Well, of course you can. You can say anything if it's funny enough."
Yeah.
I mean, this idea that there are certain things that are taboo is, to me, an outrageous idea. You make jokes about murder, and there's nothing worse than murder. Mm-hmm. So, of course, everything can be touched by comedy. Everything.
Yeah, including AIDS.
Absolutely. Everything. There's nothing that comedy can't touch. And I think this notion that's growing in liberal circles, that there are certain things that are untouchable is very dangerous, and I reject it.
Mm-hmm. New York Magazine's culture website, Vulture, included Buddy on their list of 100 more jokes that shape modern comedy, and they wrote that Buddy wasn't just a gay character talking about being gay. The genius of Buddy is that he was a gay character that talked about everything,
yes.
even things like racism. And they went on to say that Buddy Cole helped change the tide of how gay men were represented in comedy.
"They say that whites are smarter than blacks, but dumber than Orientals. I guess we're just right." "We're the porridge that Goldilocks chose. Not too hot, like those saucy Africans, but not too cold, like those chilly Chinese."
Buddy was a warrior. I mean, I think of myself as a warrior, and I think of Buddy Cole as my armor in a way.
That's a great way of looking at it.
And Buddy Cole was the first through the door. And
yeah.
You pay for that. You pay a high price for that. But he was a warrior. He is a warrior. And now it's like almost like I'm like a superhero that's been buried for 20 years. And now they're coming in saying, "It's your time. Get up. You got to go."
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny that you mentioned that first through the door, because it makes me think of the experimental art band The Residents and their theory.
Yeah.
Their theory of obscurity. Are you familiar with
Very
this theory?
Very much so, yeah. I'm familiar with everybody who's obscure that hasn't gotten their due.
Yeah, but for those of our listeners who don't know it, the Residents' theory of obscurity is the idea that an artist can only produce pure art when he or she ignores the commercial pressures of the outside world, and then the artist's work may not become popular, but instead it's the imitators that will enjoy commercial success.
Absolutely. This is something I've learned in my life, is that there's no money in first.
Yeah.
There's actually no money even in second. Second's the real chump change. Because then you get nothing. You're not first, so the history books aren't going to, you know, say you were first, because eventually the person who's first will get their credit, maybe long after they're dead. But it's third which gets the money and fame and glory while they're alive.
Yeah.
And that's what I've discovered, is that it's third. If you're someone that wants money and fame in your own life,
be third. Wait.
Yeah.
If that's what you want.
Yeah, but that doesn't.
But art does. I totally agree. Art operates completely independent of society.
Yeah. There's a sentence late in Buddy Babylon where Buddy says, quote, "My goal is not to shock and horrify, yes, but to tell the truth. And if that truth shocks and horrifies, well, maybe you should just get out more."
Yes.
End quote.
And that couldn't be truer today, where we have, you know, an army of, like, you know, keyboard warriors who really need to get some sun. They really need to get out there and skin their knee.
Yeah, keyboard warriors, that's great. So that's not just Buddy Cole's goal, it's also Scott Thompson's
goal, isn't it?
Yeah. So, yeah, you've said that you think a lot of people still assume that Buddy Cole is who you are.
Yeah, they do. And they constantly publish pictures of Buddy Cole and then put my name under it, which used to really bother me. Now I'm kind of philosophical about it because I go, well, it's not me. But before, I used to think, well, God, everybody will think I'm that faggy. And, you know, and I'm hopefully a little more accepting of myself now. But, you know, like, I look to my, like one of my heroes is Barry Humphries, who's the man behind
Dame Edna. Yeah, and he was also in Bedazzled.
He's my biggest influence. And I look at him and I go, no one puts a picture of Barry Humphries and says Dame Edna, or no one puts a picture of Dame Edna and says Barry Humphries. And I don't know if I'll ever get that, but that's kind of what I want. I want people to see Buddy Cole as a real person. And me, not so much.
Scott Thompson is the co-author, along with Paul Bellini, of Buddy Babylon, the autobiography of Buddy Cole. You can find out more about Scott and Buddy on our website, wpr.org/beta. And we'd love to know what you think of the show. You can email us at beta@wpr.org.